The last ice age ended about 10,000 years ago, and the planet has been in what is called an interglacial period since. Archaeologists like Michael Jokum have spent years trying to decipher what that dramatic change in climate meant for the generations of hunters and gatherers experiencing the shift. Michael Jokum, a professor of anthropology at the University of California, Santa Barbara, was this fall's speaker in the Stigler Lecture Series at the University of Arkansas. While here, he discussed the end of the last ice age and the sometimes difficult job of trying to get information about events that took place tens of centuries ago.
They say the average is about 100,000 for a glacial period, but it really has varied, and I think they've changed over time during the course of the Pleistocene. But the interglacials average around 10,000 years, and that's what we're in right now.
And those numbers, that's what's hard for so many of us who don't study geology or meteorology or anthropology to wrap our heads around.
Yes.
10,000 years.
Yes. It's hard for me even now to even conceive what that means, how many generations of people and so forth. So, yeah, but that's a scale we have to think in.
And so 10,000 years ago, we were coming out of the end of these bearings.
Yes.
And the end of what we lay people would call the Ice Age?
That's right. Well, the Ice Age refers to two things, actually. It refers to one of those cold episodes in this 2 million-plus-year period, but it also refers to the entire period because overall it was colder on Earth than earlier. But when I mean the end of the Ice Age, I'm talking about the last ice advance, the last really cold period.
Fair to say that era represents climate change?
Oh, absolutely. It was a global warming, no doubt about it. And it seems the more evidence we have, it seems that it happened rather quickly.
Okay, and again, for the benefit of when we're talking centuries or millennia, how quickly is relatively quickly?
Certainly within a century, big changes were obvious.
That is quickly.
Yeah, it is quickly. It is quickly.
What can we know about those changes through?
Well, there are a variety of techniques. I mean, ice cores from both Greenland and Antarctica have been really vital in telling us about the history of that whole period, recording the sea surface temperature and also the air temperature indirectly. So that's been sort of the background. Then there's a lot of sort of earthbound geological studies, pollen studies, and the like that sort of supplement that.
You've done much studying in Europe and in southern Germany, right?
Yes, right. Virtually my whole career has been in southern Germany. Yeah.
Where in southern Germany? What are you finding?
Well, I'm in an area just south of the Danube and north of the Alps. It's an area that when I was a graduate student, I spent a year in Germany, in southern Germany at the University of Tübingen. And realized that along the Danube there was just so much archaeology of the Paleolithic, of the Old Stone Age, and realized too that the end of the Ice Age was well represented. Mesolithic, Middle Stone Age sites were known, but not a lot of information about those sites was known. And so I figured, okay, as a foreigner wanting to work in Germany, I should find a niche where I won't be stepping on anybody's toes. And that was that Middle Stone Age, Mesolithic period there in that region. And it's perfect for looking at the end of the Ice Age because being just north of the Alps, the glaciers were there. And so when the glaciers retreated as the Earth warmed, big changes were obvious in the whole environment.
This is too broad a question, but what are you looking for when you're looking for evidence of the end of the Ice Age?
Well, first and foremost, I'm looking for sites from that period. And I say that because they're very hard to find. Germany is a very civilized, cultivated landscape. And so sites are not obvious on the surface in most cases from these early periods because all we're finding are stones and bones primarily. So what I'm looking for especially would be sites from this period that have not only stone tools, which can only tell you so much, but also organic remains, bone, antler, plant remains if possible, that would supplement the stones and say, what were people eating? How were they butchering their animals? What was the season of this site versus another site because they were mobile people and so forth?
It sounds incredibly difficult.
Well, it's been challenging. It's been great fun. But that's why I kid and say I've spent my whole career in a peat bog, because I focused on these lakes that have dried up, forming peat bogs now, because the peat preserves things so well. And that's really what drew me into this area.
How difficult is... When do you know that you have a site, if you find a peat bog?
You look and you... Well, you mainly you look for stone tools that are clearly human manufactures. You look for animal bones, but especially associated with either stone tools or showing marks of cutting and butchering. We've dug many a hole where we find animal bones, but they look to be natural deposits of animals who happen to die in the lake or at the lake edge. Yeah.
So it sounds like there are a lot of dots, and you can't connect them all.
Not very well. It's a challenge, as they say. So there, this area is just full of old lakes and bogs, and much of my career has been focused on those areas because of the potential of finding bone and other materials. And the only way to find it, well, we do two things. We look at plowed fields near those bodies of water, near the lake edges, hoping that the plow has brought up stone artifacts telling us that people were there at the right time. And then we go into the edge of these lakes or river edges and simply dig holes looking to see if they threw their garbage into the lake. And in many cases, they did.
When you're digging a hole, what's a eureka moment when you know you've got something that could lead to information?
Well, the first eureka moment would be finding any of those bits of evidence. One stone tool that's clearly a human tool tells us, okay, somebody was here. And we will follow that down. We'll spread out from there and look for a real concentration of material. Then the next step is to do an excavation to see if it's been disturbed by wave action or other natural processes, because we want something that's intact. And I've dug many a site where there are all these tools, all these remains, but it's clear that the whole body of material has been disturbed and disrupted. So that's the downside of working at a dynamic edge of a lake.
I imagine it's a little bit humbling, though, to be studying people who lived 10,000 years ago. I mean, you realize that in the grand scheme of things, we're that quintessential blip.
Yes. Yeah. It does lend a perspective. And I often wonder how we or I could even have coped with these changes back then.
I would have been mammoth meat.
Yeah, exactly. No. It's just unimaginable in a way. And these people, I can't say they've come alive to me, because this archaeological record doesn't lend itself to seeing individuals or anything like that. But you can try to imagine what it must have been like for people to see the reindeer aren't coming through in such numbers anymore. And that area used to be a nice, you know, migration path. Now it's getting forested and trees growing in the way and animals are shifting around. And what do I do? And yeah. One change that seems to have been pretty positive is that fish were colonizing this area as the ice retreated. And we see that in the archaeological record, that fishing gradually becomes more and more important. They're taking advantage of that and supplementing, you know, the sort of the waning larder of big game that was out there.
Is there any idea what a typical life expectancy was then? Is there any way to know that?
No. Mostly by analogy. Yeah. Just based on the few skeletal studies we have, and there aren't many, but also analogy with living hunter-gatherers, it wouldn't be unlikely that maybe 30, 35 was sort of the average lifespan.
What would be a holy grail for you in that peat bog?
Oh, I don't know. We have sites on islands in the middle of lakes, and so we think they must have had canoes or something. And there have been canoes from this period found, one or two, up in northern Europe. In a way, that would be a holy grail, to just because it's such a momentous kind of find and really transformational. But at the same time, I would not want to find it, because once you find something that big made out of wood in a peat bog, you have to worry about how you're going to conserve it. Mm-hmm. Because as soon as the bones or the wood are exposed, they start to dry out and crack and disintegrate. Just to give you an example, my German colleagues over there were digging next to where I was digging, just down the field away, and found Bronze Age canoes, dugouts. And they uncovered them, they photographed them, mapped them, and covered them up again because they didn't want to have to deal with the preservation.
Michael Jokum is a professor of anthropology at the University of California, Santa Barbara, and was the featured speaker for this fall's Stigler Lecture at the University of Arkansas. He talked to me during his visit to Northwest Arkansas.